Welcome to the Blockchain Practitioners Podcast, where we talk to experts, professors, and leaders in the industry to learn about a technology which in a few years will affect the lives of us all. My name is Alexandros and I'm your host for this episode. In this episode, we talk to Christophe de Boeckeleer, a Belgian politician and member of parliament who recently decided to accept Bitcoin as his salary. I hope you enjoy this episode. Christophe, thank you very much for coming to the Blockchain Practitioners Podcast.
My pleasure.
Could you introduce yourself?
So my name is Christophe de Boeckeleer. I'm a member of parliament in Belgium. I'm 34 years old. I have an economical background with my university studies. As a member of parliament, I'm working mostly on climate change, mobility, and financial questions. Fiscality, budget, and now also since a few years on blockchain and the crypto world, because that's the main application of blockchain today.
And how did you get into blockchain and cryptocurrencies yourself? What attracted you to them?
So in the beginning, it was friends making money on exchanges and telling me. It was in 2017. The interest was growing and I thought, okay, I'm going to see what it is. So the best way to understand technology or understand what we can do with it is to invest some money on an exchange. And that's how it started. And after that, I was beginning to think, okay, why are people so confident in that technology? Why are they putting their money in that? And that's why I began to study, to go to conferences, to watch videos on the internet, and to make myself an idea of the technology behind it. And what I saw, blockchain is a technology that changes the way we can store and transfer information. And when you look to history, each time we had a new way to store and transfer information, we had another social structure coming. In the beginning, there was only oral tradition, to share information. And so we could also only organize ourselves within small groups. It was the tribes. And then when we had a written tradition, we were able to write, we could organize in more bigger groups. So we begin to live in cities. Then you have the printing, which allows us to organize in each more bigger groups. And you had the beginning of the countries. And with the IT, we saw that continents became a lot of countries began to organize themselves in continents. And now with the blockchain technology, I think it's a new way which is really disruptive and which will allow us to organize ourselves transnational with other people in all over the world. So that will be a big game changer. And when I saw this and I understood this, I thought, okay, there is something really important happening, and politics have to open their eyes. And that's why already in 2018, I put on a leaflet, a political leaflet, I wrote, okay, it's important we political people open their eyes and the economic world have to open their eyes to do that new thing, because it will change our way of our social structures. And there's nothing that changes so much during that time. So last year I started the Brussels Blockchain Conference. It's a few conferences that I organized with a friend, Raoul Ulens, which is a very good guy in very well. I mean, he writes a lot of blog posts on NFT and the crypto world. And we organize conferences to give the information to the people and trying to bring together the blockchain world and the economic and the political established world. And we try to make them communicate and making projects together. So that's the purpose of the Brussels Blockchain Conference. So that was last year. And then I saw it helps, but it's not yet enough. I decided to do this mediatic and political a big announcement that I will convert my salary during all the year in Bitcoin. and the aim of this is not, it's not a financial act, it's a political act to trying to wake up the traditional financial world to say, pay attention, there's something coming, and now it's beginning to be too late if we're not waking up and beginning to regulate, to organize things around Bitcoin and cryptocurrencies. So that was the whole path.
And one of the things that I also saw myself, you know, a few minutes before we met now for the podcast, is that for the very first time, someone auctioned his house as an NFT in the United States. You know, it's like a completely, you know, different way of doing business, of course, right?
Of course.
And arguably you don't have any intermediaries besides the person or the company that creates the NFT, of course, right? And it's just like, it's completely quickly, right? You don't need to do, at least for now, any kind of paperwork. You don't do any of these kinds of things. And it's because normally if you buy a house, it takes months, right? And now it's just one NFT, you sell it, and within a few seconds, you're the owner of a house or of an asset, basically, right?
Yeah, so you see it's gonna change a lot of things. Also in the enterprise world, you know, before you could only gain money from your work. And then it appears the societies, the enterprises, you could have the actions, the shares of your company that brings you money. And now you have a third step, which is additioning to the old ones. You know, it never replaces. It's a new way to make money with the ICOs. So and with tokens. So when you see that, you touch to the social structures. You touch to the really very concrete things, because buying a house, having a company, and making money, that's very concrete things in people's lives. So it's for me, it's an evidence. It's going to change the world.
And you kind of said a little bit that you accepted Bitcoin as your salary to wake up the financial world. Was this the main reason that you decided accept it as salary, or was there also any other motivation?
No, so my motivation, so you know, I'm still paid in euros, but I convert my salary in Bitcoin because the parliament is not ready yet to pay me in Bitcoin. They will maybe. I asked them to change their software with which they pay the salaries to be able to pay my salary on exchange, but they have to make a few changes, but only technical changes, they told me. So maybe it will be possible in a few months. So that will be a first step, you know, but it will still be euros that will be converted afterwards. So yeah, that's the only thing. Why did I do that? It's because I think I want to bring attention to a very important thing, is that people are very ignorant on the financial topic, and this is a very privilege of the rich people, you know, because they have the knowledge, they know how to invest, they know how works the financial market, but the most of the people, the biggest part of the people, they don't know that, so they can't make money with their money. Even if they have a small amount of money, they could make money, but they can't, because they don't know the rules and they don't know where to go, how to invest correctly, what is a central bank, how works the stock exchange, and things like that. So the political message I give also is to people, please, now we have to educate people to concrete financial things from the school on. So very early, at a very early stage at school, they have to learn, we have to learn children about what is money, how does it work, because money is not bad, you know, it's only bad if you don't know it and you leave it to a few people, then it becomes bad for the poor people. But if the poor people, they gain financial education, they will be able to participate to what is good with finance, is that it is the blood of the economy. So if you can handle it well, you can give forces and ampleur, how do you say that, greatness to your projects if you have money. So if you have good projects, money is good.
I do have another. I had a question about how you report your taxes, but you said that you're still paid in euros, so now it makes sense how you do your taxes and then you convert.
It's a good question. We have to regulate. It's very important. We work on a regulation framework in Europe, but also in every European country, because in the member states, because in the Europe is talking about the MiCA, you know, it will be the regulation of the crypto assets market, but it will take some time, like I think two or three more years. So if we want not to be too late, if we look to other countries in the world, European member states have to work on taxonomy, because it's not my idea. My vision is that we will still have a centralized financial world. It will continue to exist because it brings stability. It brings very good things. But we also need a counter power in the monetary system. And that can come from Bitcoin and from the crypto. But the two have to work together. If we don't work together, it will never work. Not the traditional one, but not the new one neither. So we really need to work together, and we also need to understand how we will organize taxonomy, because the budget of the states needs to be financed, you know. And if everyone goes on the new world and there is no taxes, no rules, it won't work. So we really have to work on the architecture of the bridge between those two worlds, and that's, I think, it's the main purpose of our debates and democratic discussions. It's not about is it good or bad to have Bitcoin, but it's how can we make the bridge between the two financial systems.
And I do have a question for you, like an idea that I had in terms of taxes, right? An idea that I had was perhaps create a legislation which says that every single, let's say, transaction or every single, let's say, for instance, smart contract that is created, it has like a code which automatically, when you send money to the smart contract, it automatically sends a percentage of the taxes to the government's wallet. Do you think that would be something that would be useful or something that would work, or do you see it, how would you envision perhaps a doable or a workable system of taxation for not only Bitcoin but for Ethereum and all the other cryptocurrencies, of course, as well?
So the first thing is that we have to accept an uncertainty. I don't know, really, I don't know how it will look like. I have maybe some ideas what it could look like, but I don't know how it will look like. And that's the first thing. It's often when we look to a problem, and especially in the political world, when we look to a problem and we don't see immediately the answer, the solution, we are skeptic and we think, okay, maybe we have to ban that, because otherwise it won't work. I don't think it's a good way of working, because it's a really new technology with very new way of thinking, and we have to change our minds in the way we see things, and that's very difficult. And I think the services we will use from Bitcoin, the Bitcoin world, for example, there are a lot we cannot even imagine for the moment, because it's a really new way of thinking. How can it work on taxonomy? I think, yeah, what you say is an interesting idea, and we should try it, or we should try to theorize it and see if it can work on a bigger scale. But I think it's one of the things that can work. Yeah, in fact, what is important is when there is creation of wealth, there must be a contribution to a common good, you know, because otherwise it won't work. That's the only thing I'm certain of.
I have another question. You mentioned it, that, you know, centralized finance and decentralized finance will coexist, because every single financial system has its advantages and disadvantages. you elaborate a little bit what advantages there are to each system?
I think the advantage of the centralized finance, of centralized finance, is the stability. Some form of stability, because if we look to the past, it's not always stability, and not in every country. But in developed countries, you have a form of stability, a sort of stability, and you have the ability to impact the economy through your monetary system. Some people will say it's a good thing. Some people will say it's a bad thing. It depends how you look to history and to how you consider some events in history. Some will say, yeah, without the leadership of the central banks, we would be better off. And some would say, we would be better off. You know, so it's difficult to say, but there is something interesting in having the power on your monetary system, because you can inflect the economy. So I would say that's the advantage. But yeah, the disadvantages, you know them. It's a lack of transparency. It's a lot of intermediaries which slow everything down, brings a lot of extra costs. Give the information to only some people, so it's not very fair. Those are the disadvantages. And what I see also, the biggest disadvantage is in developing world, because there you see a lot of people who don't have access. So there you have also a problem of accessibility. So the advantages of the decentralized world is the worldwide accessibility. That's the biggest one. Everyone can go and use and very easily. What's more difficult, what's also good is that you have less costs.
Well, Ethereum has some gas fees, so that's arguable for the moment.
That's right. Gas fees. So yeah, I think the that's why I think the two have to work together, because I think the two have interesting advantages, and the disadvantages have to break themselves out because coming from the two systems.
You know, like, as I see it, is of course I see them also coexisting, but long term, let's say within 20, 30 years, as the older generation passes away, let's say. And I think the younger generation would be more adept to go to decentralized finance and digital assets, of course, and everything, than centralized one. I think that's long term, decentralized finance will somewhat replace centralized finance within some decades. Do you think that could be possible in some ways?
I think you're very optimistic when you talk about 20, 30 years. I think the evolution takes a lot, some more time, and that's okay, you know. Between the moment electricity was invented, you know, in the 19th century, and the moment you had lamps replacing candles in all cities. Even now, we're not there yet. You know, a lot of places in the world you don't have it yet. So, I think you may be right that decentralized finance would replace globally and totally decentralized finance, but it will take time, and it's not the point now. And we should not talk too much about that, because otherwise we are frightening people which have to work with us, because we never make the decentralized finance take a real place in the financial world if we build it against the old one, the old financial world. It will never work. They're bigger than us, and they're stronger. So we have to work with them, and that's right, because we are too easily forgetting what the centralized financial world have bring us these last centuries.
Another question that I had was about DAOs, and DAOs are decentralized autonomous organizations, And one of the things that you can do with them is to create basically an decentralized digital organization without a leader. And, you know, people, let's say within the DAO, have a percentage of voting power over certain decisions that need to be made. And do you see this somehow also changing the political structure in some ways? Like, this could help a lot, perhaps with at least from the top of my head, with referendums, perhaps, or having more transparent and open political decisions. How do you see this? Do you see this as well, or do you not see kind of like the connection? Or how do you? What are your thoughts generally about DAOs?
So yeah, I know about DAOs. So I'm not an expert of all these things. You know, I'm a political guy trying to have the helicopter vision, you know, to understand in which direction we have to go. So I'm not an expert, a technical expert. But yeah, DAO, I know what it is. I know how it works. I know what it can bring. I think it will first change the. It will change all organizations, of course. We are trying since like 10, 20, 30 years to do more and more participation, flat management in the companies, co-creation, all those words, collaboration, referendum and things like that. What is that? It is indeed co-decision and trying to have less hierarchy. Pyramidal organizations, I think, like that. Pyramidal organizations, but more flat organizations. And DAO will be the key of that. So yeah, I think it will change the enterprises. I think, and I hope, it will change also political parties, which are very pyramidical organizations. Before we have a country with a DAO taking real decision, I think it's not for tomorrow. But I think give us like 4 or 5 years and you will have cities, really cities with the DAOs, I think, that will really work. I think so.
Where do you see the blockchain industry as a whole in 5 years? On a global scale, but also more local, such as, you know, Europe, for instance, or even more local being your country, Belgium?
Well, I think we're on a fast track, so it will be exponential. The last few months, everybody have heard about blockchain and Bitcoin. Those two words people have heard about. It's still not easy to understand for everybody, but everyone has heard about it. You see regulation coming. So it's not a point anymore. It will come and it will be exponential. I think that's why I did what I did with my salary, is that we're late in Europe, we're too late. And if we want to accelerate and to play a role, we need to have a vision. So we need first to have a political debate on this, because the US has its vision, the China has its vision. So you see things are changing, and we are, because of our political system in Europe, where we have to manage 27 different states, it takes a lot of time. So I'm not that optimistic, but I'm going to fight to be sure Europe will have its part of the cake. I think if we want to have our voice, it will be by working together the big enterprises, big companies, and the entrepreneurs, because we need to have the force, the strength of the big companies, and the agility, the flexibility, and the ideas of the entrepreneurs. And I think if we can do this, it will be a game changer in Europe, and it will be very differentiating by what is happening now in China and in the US. So Yeah, let's be optimistic and say that in 5 years we will have a real ecosystem in Europe, in Brussels, I think, because it's the center, it's the capital of Europe. So I think Brussels have to play his role. But there is still a way to go before we get there.
And you also mentioned it, you know, that DAOs could perhaps govern local cities in more or less five years. Do you mean, for instance, smaller cities, I suppose, or major cities? Because, of course, it's a bit different to govern, let's say, a city that has 50,000. And it's completely different if you use DAO for New York, Tokyo, Moscow, London, or something, or like such a large city, of course.
Yeah, so when I say govern cities, I don't think it will be like govern city. It will be like a co-decision, you know? I think it will be, it's not tomorrow that we will have really governance by DAO without elected persons that supervise everything. So that's not directly, but I think it will begin with small countries. Yeah, small cities, small countries. And you see, why does El Salvador is able to do what they did with Bitcoin? It's because they're very small, and it's easier to manage when you're small and flexible, and you can easily adapt. You know, so I think it will be the same with cities. It will begin with small villages or small cities that are very innovative and where you have visionary leaders.
No, I agree. And of course, you know, also, as you said, it's also very dangerous to have, at least for now and for the forthcoming years, let's say 5, 10, 20 years, to just have, you know, a DAO being without a leader in some ways, of course, as well. Maybe you can do it with a small DAO, but if you do it in a city and you don't have a leader there, it's and there is like a mistake or anything, then who's going to correct the mistake?
That's it.
What kind of advice would you have for young people who like to start a career either in blockchain? This is what I ask most people that come on the podcast. For instance, what kind of advice would you have for people that would like to start a career in blockchain and start building this new industry? Or because, of course, you're not perhaps entirely blockchain oriented, you can also give an advice for something else, of course, as well, maybe in politics or in any other discipline.
No, I would say in blockchain, it's important. You don't have to look to the society as it is now, you know. You have to see the society in 10, 20, 50 years and always look back to the past and say, okay, when people in the beginning of the 90s were working on the internet, nobody was thinking it was worth, you know, because there was a guy saying it was a big CEO of a big company in France. And he says in the mid 90s, internet will never work because it doesn't support voice and images, you know. And so I think if you see what is the power of blockchain, the best decision you can make is to begin and to work in that on that topic, because for sure, within 10 years you will be at the heart of what people need and what will be the creation of wealth in Europe.
And of course you do have your political career, and you already mentioned it to us, the events that you're organizing. Are you working on any other interesting projects besides of course your political career and the events that you would like to share with our audience?
If we talk about blockchain, my role is to change the law. So I try now to come with interesting things to to bring clarity in the legal framework in Belgium for blockchain. So if people are interested to create companies and invest, they can come to Belgium because we will try to have an interesting framework for them. And that's on what I'm working now. And I'm also working on some propositions, suggestions to change things from what I talked about in the beginning, the ignorance of the people about finance in general, how to bring that into schools, how to make from Belgium a country where people can understand finance and can use them. You can use finance for their positive projects. But I can say everything. I cannot say everything now. So we can talk. Make a new talk in a few months. I'll have more things to say.
And I have another question that just came to my mind now. Of course, you said that your role is to change legislation for the better, and in the parliament and in general. Of course, you mentioned it a little bit that Europe is a bit behind in that. But in Belgium, do you see perhaps in the parliament other politicians like you who are more interested towards that are trying to push it? Or for the moment, you kind of feel that you're the only one? Or how does it?
Yeah, I think I feel lonely because people now in the political world, people are talking about blockchain. They say, okay, blockchain is interesting, blockchain is good, we should try to understand what is blockchain, but Bitcoin is bad and crypto is bad, you know. That's still the main idea. I think it will change in the coming months and years, but for the moment they are telling me all what you read, like, you know, in the big news. It's the political, the environmental impact of blockchain. Is that crypto is for people, for terrorists and people who are doing bad things? So that's still the main talks. And I try to deconstruct that with factual things, concrete examples.
Yes, yes, and especially Bitcoin is far easier, you know, to track in terms of spending than even fiat currency, right? Like normal currency, if I pay someone with cash, that you cannot track as if I pay someone, let's say, with Bitcoin or Ethereum or Ether or a product or service.
Of course.
Mm-hmm. And well, a last question before we finish. You kind of said that you're also involved in sustainability, and you also mentioned the sustainability of Bitcoin. For our listeners who may be also a bit skeptical about the sustainability part of Bitcoin, how do you tackle that?
So there are different things. The first thing is that we have to understand every technology costs energy. Yeah. So if you want to have to really handle this, you have to ask yourself: is the technology worth the energy it consumes? So all the talk we had in the beginning about our vision of the monetary system, about the 2 billion people who don't have access to finance today, and that maybe with Bitcoin have a new way to participate to the world economy. Is this not worth the energy it costs? That's the first thing. Second thing, you have to compare things that are comparable. So if you look to what costs a Bitcoin transaction, for example, when you simplify things, okay, you say a Bitcoin transaction is that much CO2. You also have to say, okay, and a wire transfer from your bank, how much CO2? Because that's comparable. And nobody does that. So if we talk about figures, we have to put all the figures together and then take decisions. The other thing is, it's a very young very young technology. 10 years, 12 years, that's nothing. So it's going to evolve. It's going to get better. All people working in crypto on the crypto market, they know it will never be a real alternative financial system if there is if we're not tackling the climate question. That's for sure. Nobody wants that. So there are some very interesting solutions. You know them, Lightning Network. We're trying to see if it can help on a bigger scale. Some are going from proof of work to proof of stake. For some currencies, it can be interesting. So that and those innovations are really changing, really disruptive on a climate from a climate point of view. And then the last thing is the energy that will be needed. It is an economy of energy. It is an economy, and in the economy, there is something that works at each time is that people trying to get the best prices. So people who are mining, the mining farms, they are trying to get the best prices. And where do we get the best prices for energy? You find them where there is too much energy, where we cannot sell the energy to people because there is no people or there is too less people. And so we see that happens very near renewable energy in developing countries where the electricity grid is not developed enough to come to the people. So in those parts of the world, there are big hydraulic electricity production, for example, or geothermal electricity production that is lost. And mining farms come get there and they just consume energy that would be lost otherwise. And with the money the mining farms give to the people who are to the producers are able to develop the electricity grid in small villages. And then when they do that, they prefer to sell their electricity to the people because they can sell it much higher than to mining farms who are always trying to have the lowest prices. So when the mining farms, and it's happening now, and that's how it's going to work, the mining, is that they're going to the near those places where it's too much energy. And when the existing grid is enough developed, the mining farms are going away from that place because the electricity goes to the people because they buy it at higher prices. And so the mining farms are going on other places where there are a surplus of energy. So I think with all those, there is no easy answer to that question. But with all these elements, we see maybe we will be able to tackle the climate impact of the environmental impact of crypto. And if not, crypto will not develop. There will be a stop because people are working on this and people all around the world are very enough conscious about the importance of a sustainable world. So I'm not that afraid. I think it's important. We have to look at that. And we also have to have a regulation for all that, you know. It's very important to regulate the mining and to have a sustainable mining. Yeah.
And Christoph, thank you very much for coming to the podcast. I hope it was fun for you as it was for me. And thank you very much for your valuable time.
Yeah, thank you for the invitation. It was great to discuss with you. Congratulations for what you do, because we need people like you that make noise on on crypto. Very important.
Thank you.
Because I apologize for my English, which is, as you hear, not very very good. I sometimes have to find my words, but I hope you understand all what I had to say.
No, man, your English is perfect. Thank you.
Yep. See you later. Bye.
See you. Bye-bye. Thank you for listening to the Blockchain Practitioners podcast. I hope you enjoyed the episode and learned something new today. If you're working on a project in the blockchain industry and you would like to be on the podcast and talk about it, please feel free to reach out to us. Likewise, if you have any ideas as to how we could improve the podcast, please feel free to reach out to my colleagues, either Stella or Steven or me, and let us know. Thank you very much.